Hello, and welcome again to the Ready List podcast. My name is Sue Merry. I'm an Alexander Technique teacher and founder member of Educare Small School. So we've had two Ready List episodes, podcast episodes on the A team. And there is a little bit of background information that's useful to have if you want to practice the A team. And so in this podcast, we're going to look at what's an emotion and what's emotional intelligence. Before we do that, let's just practice our ready list. So we're going to stop, see, and breathe, and soft and tall. Letting the shoulders melt down, the head float up. So, to begin with, I want to look at the definition of emotion. What is emotion? Based on the neuroscience behind some of the ideas that you've been learning about in those neuroscience podcasts. And prediction, interoception, that sort of thing. And this definition is based on the theory of constructed emotion. It's not the only theory about emotions. There are also basic emotion theories, but I read an article actually in a research paper comparing the two, and you realize that they're actually pretty much talking about the same thing. But I would suggest you research this for yourself. But this talk will be based on the theory of constructed emotion. So to put that in succinctly, what's an emotion? An emotion is your brain's creation of what your bodily sensations mean in relation to what is going on around you in the world. So I'll just say that again. An emotion is your brain's creation of what your bodily sensations mean in relation to what is going on around you in the world. It's kind of an interesting statement, just to let that sink in for a second. And if we compare that with the more classical view of emotion, so the classical view is intuitive, really. It's that events in the world trigger emotional reactions inside of us. And in that story, you have these familiar characters like thoughts and feelings that live in distinct brain areas. But the theory of constructed emotion, in contrast, it tells a story that doesn't match your daily life, which is that your brain invisibly constructs everything you experience, including emotions. And in this story, the characters are unfamiliar, and the characters would be like a simulation and concepts and degeneracy, and this all takes place throughout the whole brain at once, as opposed to being in little areas. So when scientists put aside the classical view and just look at the data, then a radically different explanation for emotion comes to light. In fact, we find out that your emotions are not built, not built in, but are made from more basic parts. They're not universal. This is interesting. They're not universal, but vary from culture to culture. That is perhaps a bit more explained in a minute. They're not triggered. You create them. And they emerge as a combination of the physical properties of your body and a flexible brain that wires itself to whatever environment it develops in, and also your culture and upbringing, which provide that environment. So emotions are real, but not in the objective sense, say that molecules or neurons are real. They're real in the same sense that like money is real. That's like, it's not an illusion, but it's a product of human agreement. And this is why emotions are not universal, but can vary from culture to culture. They're basically sensations and groups of sensations to which we give labels, which makes them essentially subjective. So having looked at the phenomenon of affect in those previous podcasts and a little bit also in the A-Team podcasts, we can confidently say that emotions are just sensations. They're intense sensations, but they are sensations nonetheless. So what's the point then of these things? Well, I think that they let us know where we need to move towards something and where we need to move away from something was one thing. So, you know, this is pleasant and this is unpleasant. And I think, well, you know, as I started to suggest in the 18 podcasts, what would happen if we noted our feelings only in that way without attaching any meaning, significance, or judgment to them? So stepping outside of our cultural programming of what constitutes fear or anger or joy or whatever, what about if we just, and also the whole thing about is this a good or a bad emotion? Well, without trying to put any labels on these emotions, but just experiencing them as pleasant, unpleasant, activated or calm, and asking, do I want to move towards this or do I want to move away from it? So this kind of brings us neatly to the question, by the way, there is a huge amount that I've just summarized ridiculously because it's like a massive area. And I would recommend that you, if you're interested in this topic, a good place to start is with Lisa Feldman Barrett and the book How Emotions Are Made, The Secret Life of the Brain, which also encapsulates a lot of the neuroscience we've been talking about. And it's a very, it's a very, very easy read. So let's just jump on to what's emotional intelligence. Now, what do you think it is? Have a think. So my definition is that emotional intelligence is mainly the degree to which you can recognize that your brain creates your feeling states, that your brain creates your feeling states, and accept this peacefully. So as mentioned above, events in the outside world, especially the behavior of other humans, are not directly responsible for the feelings you're experiencing. Emotional intelligence, I think, involves recognizing that your feelings are your own unconscious creation. And for you to acknowledge and accept how you feel without imposing value judgments on your feeling states. As I said earlier, this is a bad emotion or this is a good emotion. It's nonsense. Emotional intelligence is, I think, is also the understanding that when you project your feelings onto other people or events, that this is a way of avoiding or offsetting states of unpleasant affect. So you're not really dealing with what's present for you. You're looking around outside of yourself to find an explanation. Such and such a person causes me to feel like this. Well, that might be your perception, but the truth is that your brain is creating your feeling states, not somebody else. And if you remember from when we looked at this before, you are not reacting to external stimuli. Your brain is actually predicting how to behave or what to do next or how to balance your body budget, really. Then it compares that prediction with any sensory input. So it's the other way around. So when we can when we can recognize all of this, then we can learn how to manage ourselves when we're in the throes of unpleasant affect. For example, when feeling some degree of unpleasant activation or extreme unpleasant calmness. And depending on our cultural framework, you know, you might label those states in some ways like anger and depression, for example. And this whole misguided notion that there are good and bad emotions, it's right to feel this, it's wrong to feel that, as something we can both consciously and unconsciously teach to children, in my experience. And the implications of believing that emotions have values attached to them can really easily lead on to the idea that I am my emotions, which you're not, and therefore I am bad or good, you know, a bad person or a good person when I have these feelings. And that's kind of depending on what you've been taught by your caregivers and your society are good and bad feelings. And often people are really reacting to behavior that is caused by certain feelings without understanding usually with children what the genesis of that behavior is. So how can we allow feelings that are uncomfortable and that we want to move away from to pass through us as easily as possible and without suffering? So, you know, emotions are just sensations. And it's really useful to remind ourselves of one of these points. I can't control how I feel, not in the moment at least. And I am not how I am feeling. In other words, my emotions don't define me. And because I might get overwhelmed occasionally and experience unpleasant affect that's perhaps labeled as anger in my culture, it doesn't make me an angry person. And just remind yourself, you know, I am far greater than the sum of my emotions. And feelings change, they pass. Apparently after about 90 seconds. Although you can reactivate them repeatedly if you want to. If you choose to keep on revisiting them, running things over in your mind endlessly. And everything must pass. Everything, everywhere is in a constant state of motion. And then, of course, comes up what we were talking about in the previous podcast. But what if it isn't? What if it isn't emotion? And I sometimes ask myself this, I must admit. And that, what if this feeling is like forever? And of course, then I loop back into unpleasant affect. So yeah, looking out for those what if questions when they're relating to your feeling states. I mean, they're quite useful if you're going camping or something. What if? You know, when it's applied to something very practical, like what if I get up in the night and it's dark and I need a torch? Better take a torch. Now, that's one thing. But what if there's a storm and a tree gets struck by lightning and then it falls down and crushes me in the tent, nobody finds me? That's probably not a helpful what if question. So just a quick recap then. Your feelings are the result of the activity of your interoceptive network. Remember that from before. And part of this network is prediction. And prediction is responsible for explaining your feelings. You make sense of these feelings by giving them labels. And your feelings determine how you behave. I used to wonder if your behavior happens before you've any conscious awareness of it and it's not directly caused by external stimuli, how can you make any changes to it? Well, I think the ready list is one system that we can use to change the prediction process. So our brains start to predict different feeling states because by giving ourselves more and more peaceful experiences in more and more different situations, then moving yourself out of the fight-flight response, the threat state, into states that are not threat-based, that influences, I think, the choices that your brain makes when it comes to try and figure out what to predict next. It's your, I think I was talking about it being your library of choices. So we can't directly influence the prediction process, but we can create conditions where the brain's less likely to predict threat, which is what I'm trying to say, really. I think that can be achieved really by anything that consistently gives you an experience of peace and pleasantness. Experiences that take you away from unpleasant activation. So the A-team is really useful as well as the ready list. And that's what I've been, focusing on in this podcast. There's a lot of other things too. And just a quick sidebar here that if you are listening to this and if you know of someone or if you yourself are experiencing a high anxiety condition, that can be changed by rewiring your brain. But that process is a little bit more, needs to be a bit more structured and intense if you are in a high anxiety condition, which is what happened to me a few years ago, about 10 or 11 years ago. And I really needed serious support and help to rewire my brain in that situation. And for me, I discovered something called the Linden method. The Linden method, if you Google that, it will pop up. Devised by a guy called Charles Linden, who'd been in a high anxiety condition, which all sounded exactly like what I was going through at the time. And he came up with a system, a very structured system, that for me, having 8 months of virtually not being able to get off the sofa and just managing myself each day, within a few days, it was unbelievable. I was back out in the world. The work had to continue, but the essential thing was I could function again quite quickly. So I super recommend the Linden method if you or anyone you know is in a high anxiety condition. It's also connected to that would be sort of conditions of addiction or depression or eating challenges. All those behaviors are related to anxiety. So I really recommend you check that out. So coming back then to the theory of constructed emotion, and I'm going to end this podcast with a quote from Lisa Feldman Barrett. And I really recommend you look up her work. The website's great too. She's got a website. So How Emotions Are Made, The Secret Life of the Brain. Here's a quote from her, which is that body budget predictions, laden with affect, not logic and reason, are the main drivers of your experience and behavior. We all think of food as delicious, as if the flavor were embedded in the food, when flavor is a construction and the deliciousness is our own affect. When a soldier in a war zone perceives a gun in someone's hands when no gun is present, he might actually see that gun. This is actually documented cases of this having happened, by the way. It's not a mistake, but a genuine perception. It's really important to understand that. And judges who are hungry during parole hearings render more negative decisions. Which might be useful if you ever have to undergo a parole hearing. So there's a lot of things I have missed out there and a lot of amazingly interesting stuff when you start to dig into this topic. It's a little bit mind-blowing and it totally challenges and rocks all the kind of, well, for me it did, all the kind of understanding I thought I had about stimulus and response to a stimulus and the logic part of the brain and the anxious part of the brain. And I just think if it's something that you're interested in, I really recommend you just take this as a very brief introduction and then explore it for yourself. So we've come to the end of the first batch of podcasts, series 1. which is getting us through all this information and getting you started with these practices. Moving forward, I'd like to expand the podcast to start to include other people, and also to take the microphones down to Educare Small School, so you get an idea of how all this stuff works there in practice, and with children, and why I think that's so super important. Whatever else occurs to me has been interesting. There may be a little hiatus now. I'm just dealing with a personal health issue at the moment, which I've still to discover how serious it is, but it's not, I don't think it's trivial, and the doctors don't seem to think that either. So I'm using the A-team a lot at the moment and the ready list. So wish me luck with that, and hopefully we'll meet again in series 2 of the Ready List podcast. Thank you for listening. Take care of yourself, and I hope to see you again soon.